Welcome back to this week's edition of the Midweek Reality Check with Michael Pinto, where I try to keep Wall Street and your money real.
In the last 4 months, since Mr. Powell decided to end quantitative tightening, the Fed has printed $158 billion. Also, reserves in the banking system have shot up by $330 billion, all since December of 2025. This high-powered money has been thrown at Wall Street banks for the purpose of keeping asset prices from deflating. But remember, while Wall Street benefits the most, Main Street flounders. The Fed's inflation continues to pound the middle and lower classes into the dirt, just as these inflation and insolvency conditions are sending interest rates higher. The March Consumer Price Index soared by 0.9%, almost 1% month over month, and that made the jump 3.3% year over year. The Consumer Price Index has been above the Fed's 2% target for 5 years and is rising further away from that goal, thanks to Mr. Powell and his proclivity to print money. If anyone at the Fed at this point espouses more rate cuts, they should be institutionalized. Personal income fell in February month over month by 0.1% nominally versus the expectation of an increase of 0.3% and 0.4% in the month prior. Core PCE is up 3% year over year. Core. Personal consumption expenditure, that's the Fed's preferred metric to measure inflation. So it's the most bastardized of them all, is up 3% year over year on the core rate, excluding food and energy. This data represents a very weak consumer income picture in the context of inflation that remains very high and well above, of course, their stupid asinine target, which should be zero. The savings rate fell to 4% from 4.5% in the prior month. The savings rate is down from 7% pre-COVID and 32% of the peak, at the peak of COVID stimulus. When nominal incomes are falling while inflation is high, this means real incomes are falling sharply. Right now, the tax refund checks are offsetting the spike in gas at the pump, and it's providing a ballast to the spike in overall inflation rates. However, that will only last a few months at best. If oil prices stay elevated into the summer, a significant drop in consumption should begin then. Remember, inflation has already eviscerated the bottom four quintiles of consumer spending. The stalling and even falling in some areas of real estate prices, coupled with the year-to-date flat return on equities and the negative return on bond prices, could also start to negatively impact the spending habits of those in the top quintile. And of course, remember that 11% increase in tax refunds, around $350 on average, has been eaten up by inflation. And maybe that's why this data point is important. The University of Michigan's Consumer Sentiment Index plummeted 11% to a historic low of 47.6 in early April 2026. Far below both market expectations of 52 and last year's level by 9%. This reading on consumer sentiment from Michigan, I mean, it's not my favorite metric to measure consumer confidence, but let's just say the data. The reading is lower on confidence than during the Great Recession, during the COVID shutdowns, and even after the aftermath of the 9/11 terrorist attacks. The drop in sentiment coincided with a spike in inflation expectations. This is the main point I'm taking away from the survey. I don't think it's as dire as it sounds, but let's be realistic. It's inflation. That respondents are saying that they think prices are going to be up 4.8% a year from now. That is very, very high and crushing the bottom four quintiles of consumption. In fact, the share of consumers saying their financial situation today is worse than it was last year due to inflation jumped to 54% in this survey. That's the highest reading on record. If you don't like that survey, let's look at small business and their optimism index. The NFIB small business optimism index fell 3 points in March to 95.8, leaving it below its 52-year average of 98. The last time the optimism index fell below its historical average was April of 2025. Existing home sales in March came in at the second lowest in history, just ahead of the record low set in March of 2009. That's, of course, related to the spike in interest rates. Sales volume was down 25%. Sales volume is down 25% from pre-pandemic levels. The housing market remains frozen and in a crisis. Okay, let's get to our war update for this week. As of this podcast recording, which is afternoon on Wednesday, and this could change in a minute, the view is that all parties involved will find an off-ramp to hostilities. Both Iran and U.S. need the strait opened. Iran needs it to try and resuscitate its crumbling economy, and the U.S. needs it because a recession is virtually guaranteed to occur if energy prices stay where they are right now. Trump also needs inflation to fall and fall substantially before the midterms. Therefore, the base case scenario is the strait is reopened and the IRGC remains in power. However, Iran also must assent to abandoning its nuclear program for a very long time, which is definitely not a sure thing. In other words, the situation will revert to what it was pre-war, and not much will have been achieved, with the major exception of showing rogue nations the importance of having nukes with an ICBM delivery system. By the way, before you think the danger is completely over, know this: China has warships in the region and is not happy with the United States blockade at all. What if President Xi were to escort an oil tanker through an Iranian oil tanker headed for China, or a Chinese oil tanker headed for China, through the blockade? After all, know this: China gets 15% of all of its oil from Iran, and 90% of Iranian oil goes to China. Would a U.S. warship dare to intercept a Chinese vessel? How much longer will Xi remain patient? But here's the thing we have to take away from this. Listen, even after all parties agree to shake hands and Trump pulls up stakes, as he says, and goes home, Iran is still going to be in a theocracy. It's going to have most of its nuclear enriched uranium. And oil prices will not go back to $65 a barrel, in my opinion. That's a very low odds, even if an agreement is reached. And that's maybe why the IMF, the International Monetary Fund, warned a recession is coming if energy prices don't drop soon. But the funny thing is, Wall Street has put out very strong earnings estimates for all of this year, even throughout this war, been very ebullient. And that strong earnings projection coming from Wall Street is an excuse they use for why stocks have held up relatively well, because earnings estimates are holding up well. Indeed, despite the war and spiking inflation, earnings estimates have actually been increasing this year. So Wall Street analysts then point to those same strong and rising EPS estimates that they themselves put together and disseminate as a rationale for why investors should buy stocks. Now, that doesn't make you chuckle, not much will. I viscerally feel this market is insane. But that is why I built the inflation, deflation, and economic cycle model, to save me from my own emotions. It is a math-based algorithm that identifies the second derivative of inflation and growth. It takes its cues from reading the footprints, i.e. trades, of the oligarchy that runs this planet. Central bankers, heads of state, multi-billionaire plutocrats. That is why I've been adding risk and reducing hedges over this past week, despite threats of the annihilation of civilizations, and despite the strait still being blocked, and despite the fact oil is still, you know, well above $90 a barrel. It's because the model says that the insiders know that a peace deal is coming. Now, what happens after that peace deal is crucial. And I'm not quite sure everything's going to go back to normal very quickly. If it does, I mean, if credit spreads continue to contract, if financial conditions continue to ease, and all the other components of my model indicate that things are going well as far as inflation and growth is concerned, then I'll get longer of stocks. If the opposite occurs, I will do the opposite. You know, if tensions flare up again, what else would I do? Sit here and hope that things get better? Like the rest of the buy and hold passively managed pigeons do, as they got wiped out in the beginning of this year? They just barely got back to even. The market just came back to even today. We're still up on the year and have been the whole time. The IDEX strategy allows me to ignore the headlines, be they good or bad, and puts my focus on what the market is doing and going to do instead of what I think it should do based on feelings. You need to do so as well.
Thank you so much for listening to this edition of The Reality Check, 5 minutes of sanity in an insane world. Please remember, if you're not already an investor with PPS, you can email me directly using mpento@pentoport.com or call the office using 732-772-9500 to get information about our portfolio services. You should also go to Amazon and order my book, The Coming Bond Market Collapse. Subscribers should contact an investment advisor before acting on any information contained in this podcast. No information on this podcast constitutes an offer to sell or buy any financial instruments or to provide any investment services. Subscribers understand there's an inherent risk in investing. PPS is a registered investment advisor.